Welcome to The Independent with Scott Atlas by The Independent Institute, my show that tries to bring a uniquely rational perspective to some of the important issues facing our society today. Today's podcast features my guest, Britain's Right Honorable Suella Braverman. Suella is a Conservative member of the UK Parliament, elected first in 2015. She has studied law at Cambridge, then in France, and has also passed the New York Law Bar exam. She served in several high posts in the UK government, including on the Education Select Committee, as a Brexit minister, as Attorney General under Boris Johnson until 2022, Home Secretary under Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak, with her then stated priorities to stop small boat immigration across the English Channel, common sense policing, and safety for the British people. Suella says, quote, "You can make your life and that of others better by taking responsibility, self-empowerment, and service," unquote. Thanks for joining us and stay tuned. Okay, welcome, Suella Braverman.
Hello. Hello, Scott.
Thank you for taking time out of your busy parliamentary session and enlightening us over here about the UK and everything else that's happening in the world. Sadly, we have a shared history of a lot of problems right now, but some things seem to be on the mend in the United States, and I'm not so sure you're there yet in the UK. And we'll touch on some of these topics. The first thing I want to talk about, of course, are the elections, the consequences, what to expect, and as you know, of course, the United States election, but also the UK elections, the European elections have all been either shocking or very significant in terms of what they imply. And I'd love to hear your views on both the UK elections and the consequences of the US election. I want to start that conversation by giving you my own sort of background observation on what happened in the U.S., because it's very striking that it seems like there's a realignment that is not necessarily based on party line, but more based on sort of working class people and a very different demographic that supported President Trump's election than the typical so-called Republican side. I mean, this was a dominating election because of the swing of voters, particularly Hispanics toward President Trump, Hispanic men toward President Trump. And he also won all of the states that were thought to be so-called swing states, the close states. So it was a very significant win, and there's some realignment. And I'm wondering what's happening in the UK and what's your view of what's going on in the US and how and all that?
Yeah, well, I think the realignment is the word you used, and I think that's the right word. And there's a real shifting of the tectonic plates in the UK and definitely in the US, with the victory of Donald Trump. You know, that's something that really cheered me up to see a strong, patriotic, conservative leader win on the back of a lot of disillusionment and failure of the left. I very much hope that there will be an influence from the change in direction that America will see here in the UK. I think there's an opportunity to reassert our very important special relationship between the UK and the United Kingdom if the Labour government grasps that opportunity. But I think that what's happened in the US, it feels like a real vindication of strong borders, a sound economy through low taxation and deregulation, and fighting the woke. You know, I just saw the bill that's just been approved it might seem like a small thing, but it's very symbolic, you know, to ban the gender neutral toilets at the Capitol. This is the kind of thing that we unfortunately are yet to do, despite voices on the right urging our government to do. here in the UK.
Yes, I think.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, it is a complete repudiation of these far leftist policies. First of all, there's a record of failure here in the United States of the Biden administration on so many levels, not just the economy domestically, but I feel a weakness in America has created the opportunity for these conflicts internationally, and we've seen that. But the other issue here is the social side of it, and the so-called woke policies, that the pendulum theory, where the pendulum had swung so far to one side that finally people are impacted with their own children being educated with things that curricula that they don't approve of. With their daughters competing in sports against transgenders at their own peril, et cetera. And I want to start first. I would like to have your explanation, because I don't think Americans understand exactly what happened in the UK, where the Labour Party took control from the Conservative Party, but it really isn't that the voting switched toward Labour. And I just, maybe everyone else knew more than I did, but I think that people are a little bit misinformed over here. And maybe you could just explain that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because on the surface, it would look like the British people have rejected centre-right politics and embraced socialism. You're absolutely right. However, that is not what has happened in this general election. What has happened is that the Conservative government, of which I was a part, we had 14 years in power, absolutely lost support. And there was a collapse in our core vote. We lost support dramatically and pretty rapidly towards the end of these 14 years because we failed to limit illegal migration. We failed to cut legal migration, so the visas, despite promises to do so. We failed to cut taxes, and we failed to take on the politically correct, statist, net zero, pro-Palestinian extremist brigade, which seems to have taken a hold over our country. And so the general election victory was a failure by the Conservatives to hold our electorate together. And right, our vote crumbled. We lost millions. We lost about 4 million of our traditional supporters. Added to that, we might still have won the election had it not been for a novel factor in British politics, which does suggest a massive change in our politics going forward. We've got a contender on the right. So we've got a new party that has been set up relatively recently. It's called Reform. It's headed up by Donald Trump's very good friend, Nigel Farage. And it's a right-wing party. It advocates for lower migration, lower taxation, tough on net zero. It's net zero kind of climate skeptic party. And, a lot of the traditional territory that was previously conservative has now been occupied by the Reform Party. So what happened in British politics is the Conservative Party, the established traditional Conservative Party, kind of moved to the left. We left a massive gap on our right. And that vacuum and that gap was filled by a new party. And so at the election, the right-wing vote was smashed and divided. And it was split between these two parties. And that allowed the left-wing contender, the Labour Party, to come through the middle. Because if you look at the numbers, the Labour Party actually won with fewer votes than Jeremy Corbyn, the previous Labour leader, lost the general election in 2019 with. So their vote share was still pretty low. There was not a, this general election does not mean a newfound enthusiasm for socialism. This general election represents a failure of conservatism and a breakdown in the right-wing vote.
Is there a this is sort of an aside, but is there a claim by labor that they have a mandate because of the election, a popular sort of mandate, or they don't even go that far?
They do have a mandate because of our system, which is different to yours. We have the first-past-the-post system, and we don't have a presidential system. So no one has a personal vote for the president or the prime minister of this country.
I mean, I know they have literally a mandate. Yeah, they literally have it, but to me, emotionally, it's not like there was some kind of a big push toward labor here.
Yep.
But they still, of course, have power.
Yes, they have power. And because of our system, it's given them a massive majority. So they've won with a landslide. We've been reduced from about 320 MPs or 320 seats to 120. We lost over 200 of our congressmen, senators, whatever be equivalent. It's a massive defeat. Two-thirds of our party were lost at this defeat. And the landslide is because the Reform Party took our vote, Labour came through the middle. So the Reform Party only got 5 MPs, a relatively small party, but judged by the number of MPs. They did get their votes very much spread. It's spread quite thinly and evenly throughout the country, with a few pockets of concentration where they've won MPs. The Labour vote equally is spread quite thinly and broadly. And the Conservative vote has now been concentrated to only areas where we've got very strong support.
Hmm. Let me go. I would like to talk about some of these issues, but particularly immigration. Of course, that was probably the defining issue of the Donald Trump campaign. But it's also, you were very prominent and outspoken about the immigration issue for the UK. And I think there's a couple things that are different, but it's sort of the same issue. The difference that I see is that the Trump campaign and President Trump's message was, we have destroyed any kind of control over immigration. All these illegal immigrants came through, 12 to 20 million illegal immigrants, which, of course, is also shocking to the people in the U.S. who are legal immigrants, who went through the process, who spent years going through the process, met all the hurdles. And now, they're opposed to that, too. It's not just some kind of a painted as some kind of a nationalist move or something. But in the UK, and you mentioned this, it's both legal and illegal immigration that is the concern. And before you answer, I am commonly a tourist in the UK. It's one of my favorite places to visit. And we come there as tourists because it's British. I mean, this sounds sort of a simple thing to say, but the reason people come to the UK is because it's British, the tradition, the culture, the history. And this points out something that is very strange to me, that people don't seem to understand, that you want to preserve your culture. That's why the immigrants want to come there. They don't want to come there to replicate some country that they fled from. But in your country, it's even more, I think, being overwhelmed by legal and illegal immigrants. My perception when you go to London is a lot of parts of London as a tourist. Now I'm speaking sort of naively, but it doesn't even seem British anymore. Tell me how do we distinguish the immigration that comes to build a country and help it prosper, but still wants to be retaining and come to be part of that culture rather than our people coming in and just wanting to get rid of that culture?
Mm. Yeah, I think that's, you've encapsulated the problem that we're facing right now. We've reached unprecedented and unsustainable levels of inward net migration to this country. We almost approach a million net migration. And so, you know, for population size of the UK, that is off the scale. And it's importantly not what people voted for. They voted to lower immigration in the historic 2016 Brexit referendum. I campaigned to leave the European Union because I wanted the UK to control our immigration policy, not the European Union. Being a member of the European Union, you can sign up to free movement of people and you don't control it comes into your country.
Okay, so immigration was a key reason why Brexit passed.
Yes, absolutely. I think that, as a member of the European Union, one of the kind of foundational principles is member states must sign up to is free movement of workers. And that allows every EU citizen to move around the EU freely and reside in other European countries with no kind of barriers. And kind of sounds like a nice idea. But the levels of inward migration into the UK became very, very high towards the latter years of our membership, because there's an imbalance within the European Union. You've got some very wealthy European countries like UK, Germany, France, Spain, and you've got some very poor member states of the European Union, some former Eastern European countries, countries which are really developing their economies. And so there is an imbalance in the economies. All of these economies are grouped together. And so you get a lot of people from poorer European countries migrating to richer European countries. And that was a real problem during the early 2000s, really the Tony Blair premiership of the beginning of the century. And so that was what fueled the Brexit movement, headed up really by Nigel Farage, actually. He was very consequential in the movement to leave the European Union, and primarily because of migration. The other issue was sovereignty. Ultimately, the UK didn't have a sovereign parliament because our laws were set by the European Union and distant and foreign parliament. The European Parliament literally sat in another country, but yet passed laws which applied here in the UK. And so there was a real dissonance.
Right.
So for immigration reasons, I'd say primarily, and then secondarily for sovereignty reasons, the Brexit campaign was a success. Like, we resonated with the majority of the British people. It was confirmed in the 2019 general election with the victory of Boris Johnson and my party, the Conservatives, because we vowed to deliver Brexit kind of institutionally and constitutionally, and to cut migration. We actually pledged in our manifesto to lower overall numbers in 2019. So there was a lot of expectation that finally we could no longer blame the EU. We had the levers and we had the power to lower immigration. That was in 2019. Expectations were high. My own expectations were high that we would be lowering migration. Come 2022, it was horrifying to discover that actually the precise opposite had happened, and inward migration had risen pretty quickly, meteorically, exponentially. And we had, in the summer of 2022, our migration statistics were showing that we had issued a record number of work and study visas the previous year. And that was not what we had promised the British people. So we had a crisis on our hands in terms of trying to get the numbers down. And that's when I became Home Secretary. And I went into the Home Office with a real plan to try and turn the tide and get immigration numbers down by restricting visas, restricting the number of dependents that students and workers could bring, because that was actually quite a big loophole that was being exploited. You'd get someone coming here as a foreign student, but they would be bringing on average two dependents, a spouse and a child.
Yeah.
It's just unsustainable. And they were using the student visa route as a way to get into the UK on a more long-term basis. So that was being kind of exploited. As a result, we've got a booming university sector that has really exploded on the back of foreign students who pay higher tuition fees. But it hasn't necessarily improved the quality of our higher education input. That's a corollary issue. And then on work visas, we were issuing a record number of work visas. Largely cheap foreign laborers were being imported into the country to do the jobs that British people didn't want to do. as was popularly described. I don't agree with that, because we have millions of people who are claiming welfare in this country, out of work benefits, and they could be suitable for many of these jobs. Anyway, again, corollary issue there. But so we had issued a record number of visas in 2022. I went in with a plan to try and reverse this trend. And unfortunately, the Conservative cabinet and the Prime Minister didn't really agree with me. And, you know, you could be the best minister, you could be the most charismatic, most intelligent cabinet member, but if you don't have the support of the Prime Minister, you're not going to get your policies through. And
right,
so that's why we didn't really manage to institute enough changes in time to turn the tide and lower immigration.
Right. You know, I think this is an interesting conversation also, because for the listeners, you're the child of immigrants. My family is also immigrant family. My four grandparents, none were born in the United States. But at least in terms of my own U.S. knowledge, my grandparents came here during a time where people wanted to come to the United States because they wanted to be American. And I say that both culturally as well as philosophically, they wanted what the U.S. stood for their families, for the opportunity, for their own personal happiness. In fact, one of my grandmothers, who I was very close to, she made it a point of telling me, look, I don't have an accent from my home country. You know, she was very proud of this because she thought everyone should want to be American who was coming to the United States. And I think this is very different now. In the U.S., we see neighborhoods where English isn't even spoken. People want to retain. I'm for multiculturalism, but the argument that you can have multiculturalism and a strong country, I think there is there's friction there. You have to want to be patriotic for the country you came to, I believe, or the country cannot succeed. And now I see in the UK, and I'd like to hear what you say about this, and also you can correct me if I'm wrong. There are areas in England and like there are in France that are sort of no-go zones for police or whatever, and the neighborhoods are controlled by different sets of laws. That sort of, I don't know if it's formal or informal, but it seems like there's both a dilution of the culture of the country, as well as almost a segmentation of the country.
Yeah, it's fascinating listening to that, because I think, again, it's very very perceptive about what's happening in the UK. So you're right, there is a cultural aspect to this. And I believe multiculturalism has failed in the United Kingdom. So, you know, we're a multiracial country. We're a largely successful multi-ethnic country. But multiculturally, we've got a real problem. And originally, the idea was that people could come from lots of different countries, lots of different cultures, and they're all treated equally, however small their minority group might have been, or however at odds with the mainstream culture their preferences might be. And I think the problem is we've embraced an agenda of multiculturalism, treating all cultures equally and treating all minority groups in a way that prevails over the majority at the expense of a unifying sense of national identity in this country. And so as a result, we now have, you know, one symptom of this problem of multiculturalism is the thing that's been kind of a live debate in recent days in the UK, and that's grooming gangs. So we've had this horrendous problem for over a decade in parts of our country where gangs of rapists have operated in a really brutal way and largely with impunity. And they've targeted, and in some parts of the country, in towns like Rochdale and Rotherham, kind of northern post-industrial towns, the rapists have been gangs of largely British Pakistani Muslim men. And they've targeted white girls, largely, sometimes vulnerable girls. And they've raped them, they've groomed them, they've exploited them, they've assaulted them, they've devastated their lives. And the injustice has been exacerbated by the fact that the authorities did nothing. So in some of these towns, I've visited some of these towns, you go there and you talk to the survivors and they tell you, well, the police knew that I was being raped by the guy who drove the taxi. And that they knew about the gang of rapists, and the social worker knew, and my teacher knew, and I reported it to, you know, the local councillors, but no one did anything. And there was a culture of cover-up and fear, institutional cowardice, I call it, because the authorities didn't want to upset an ethnic minority group. They didn't want to upset community relations. They didn't want to be called racist. And that culture of silence and cover-up has led to a gross injustice, what I would call one of the biggest national scandals in our history, where hundreds of thousands of girls have been systematically abused and raped, and the authorities did nothing. And that is a symptom of multiculturalism. British people in positions of power where they owed a duty of care, were squeamish, were nervous, were scared of confronting injustice and criminality out of fear of upsetting those who came from another culture. And that weakness led to harm and devastation. And there are so many examples, to a lesser degree and some to a greater degree, where multiculturalism has distorted our sense of justice and what is right or wrong in this country. And that's because there are lots of people who are coming into this country, not everybody, but there are many people who are coming into this country who are not signing up to British values, who are not signing up to the values that define Western civilization, which have made Britain great in the past. So, you know, the common law, respect for democracy, the treatment of women, respectful treatment of women, because that's what this comes down to. It comes down to an outdated, frankly, medieval view of women that some cultures possess. And they've transplanted those attitudes here in the UK, in a Western country, and it's led to an injustice. Sharia law. There are some parts of our country where Sharia law effectively applies. There are some parts of our country where ghettos have sprung up and people don't speak English. So we're creating an atomized society if we're not careful. And we are losing a sense. That's what really worries me. We're losing a sense of a common creed, a common and unifying vision of what it is to be British. And we're losing that pride in our country.
Thank you for listening to part one of today's podcast with Suella Braverman, MP of the United Kingdom. Stay tuned for part two.